Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I think we have to have Chin in a telephone call with Ms. Mary Burns.
If it says one, you can just pass me the number. If it says one, it goes. If it's more than one, then Lynn.
I think that's the one I saw. Yes, but.
It's our understanding that you wish to participate in a hearing this morning, am I correct?
Yes.
If you would just hold on, we will be getting started very shortly, and Mr. Louis Kawadis will be conducting this hearing, and he will call on you at the appropriate time. So just hold on to the phone, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. So the main voice that we all will hear will be the Honorable Mr. Louis Kawadis.
Sir, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Very good. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for 31-412-A hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge of home arrest. Can you state your full name and ODC number for the record?
Mark Raymond Klein, 101810.
Thank you, Mr. Klein. I would like to begin your hearing with a summary. Mr. Mark Klein is, according to Ames, 69 years old. The crime of first-degree murder occurred on or about May 22, 1992. He was 42 years old, or approximately 42 years old at the time of the innocent offense. On September 20th, 1993, Mr. Klein was found guilty by jury trial. On October 20th, 1993, he was sentenced to life imprisonment. He has been parole eligible since April 16th, 2017. And it appears that Mr. Klein does not have a prior criminal history. And I state that because we always receive these large packets of information and I did not find one attached, so I'll ask you about that in a little bit, Mr. Klein. I'm going to read a summary of the offense in question, and Mr. Klein, I recognize you've been before this board before, but we always revisit the case in its entirety, so I ask for your patience, because we didn't have a concise version of the event, but I will read from the pre-sentence investigation. On May 29, 1991, Elaine Woodruff of Walnut Creek Retreat near Yucca filed a missing persons report on a neighbor, Edgar Schmitter, described as apparently being a survivalist. Woodruff had last seen Schmitter before noon on May 22, 1991, in good health and spirits, and stated he usually told her his whereabouts and when he left home. Woodruff reported hearing Schmitter's VW Baja Bug being driven in an uncharacteristically slow fashion out of the retreat about 9 o'clock p.m. that same day, as if she later speculated being driven to reduce noise, and that Schmitter's coyote dog mix Brownie apparently disappeared with him. Woodruff further reported Schmitter and another neighbor, defendant Mark Damon Klein, had been in a recent dispute at the time of over Klein's making an offer to buy a backhoe repossessed from Schmitter. When he heard this, Schmitter called Klein and threatened to poison or pour cement down Klein's well. Woodruff added she had seen Klein's van following Schmitter's VW on May 22nd, leaving at about 9 p.m., and observed Klein's return about 12:05 a.m. the next morning. The following morning, Woodruff asked Klein, accompanied by stepson Brian Liede, about the victim Klein, stated he had not seen Schmitter but had been out spotting deer the night before. That afternoon, Luger saw a fire next to Klein's house and was attempting to put it out, and Klein appeared immediately from Schmitter's house when told it was a pile of magnesium burning. Luger asked by Deputy Rasmussen if the pile, pardon me, the fire pile was large enough to burn a body. Stated yes, but I don't know anything about that. We don't talk about each other up there. On May 29, 1991, the victim's VW was located in the abandoned and wash off Gasline Road, 2.5 miles south of Walnut Creek Road. No evidence of foul play was found, and Klein repeated the story to deputies, adding Schmitter was being investigated by the Internal Revenue Service. The investigation was continued at that time. On April 17, 1992, Brian Adey, a juvenile, and the defendant's girlfriend slash wife, Lisa Laughlin Welsh, met with officers and advised that they had been present with Klein when the defendant killed the victim with a 9mm pistol on May 22, 1991. Adey, who resided with Welsh for about 3 months prior to the incident, said he knew Klein to be weird and having ideas about how to move things or kill people with light, but had considered the defendant to be a friend until the killing. About a week prior to Schmitter's death, Adey said Klein began stating he would kill the victim, which Adey thought meant he would fight the man and not actually murder him. However, on May 22, 1991, Klein took Adey with him to Schmitter's house on the pretext of returning some books to him, giving the juvenile a firearm to use if necessary. Klein then apparently confronted Schmitter outside the boy's view. And this is a shortened version of the offense as written in the pre-sentence investigation, so we'll revisit the case shortly, Mr. Klein. I will continue the summary, and that is according to Ames, Mr. Klein has completed moderate programming since being inside the Arizona Department of Corrections. According to his progress report, Mr. Klein has a release plan that involves acceptance at Reborn Assistance Halfway House. But he also claims substantial financial resources as well as Social Security benefits. He has a limited history of discipline from 1995 to 2002, with his last major on June 18, 2002 for obstructing staff. And Mr. Klein, we certainly commend you for having such a good history in these last close to 17 years. This is Mr. Klein's third hearing before the board. There's one individual who wants to support Mr. Klein by telephone interview. Otherwise, he has no letters of support from family, friends, or community. And again, I've been through the full form. Sometimes they slip through, but I didn't find any additional letters of support. This is not to say there's no further support.
There were supposed to be two other people showing up today, but I didn't know whether they were naked or not.
I will check the hearing room right now, Mr. Klein, in good faith. Do we have any supporters for Mr. Klein? Mr. Klein, at this point, we do not. And also, in fairness, we do not have, this is to say the board does not have control over the order of inmates that appear before the board. So you are first hearing for the day. And if supporters arrive during the hearing, I will certainly notify you and give them a chance to speak before the board, okay, sir?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Klein, this is another opportunity for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us about the crimes that resulted in your incarceration and why you think you should be considered for supervised release? Thank you, sir.
Okay. Deputy Schmitter and I got into an argument over, he thought I interfered with his business. He was in a bankruptcy proceeding, and the dispute was over a backhoe that I needed moved off of the area that he had it in because it was blocking the road, and I had to go up and down. But he told me that he didn't want anything to do with it. I contacted the bankruptcy people. They told me they'd given it back to him. When I talked to him again about it, he said, he didn't want anything to do with it, so I put in a bid for the backhoe to get it moved. When he found out that I put in a bid is when he made a threat to poison my well, and basically because he thought I was interfering with his business instead of just leaving it alone where it was. I immediately notified the police, which is why that's on record. Well, the backhoe was sold on Saturday before the crime took place. I went up, I believe it was a Tuesday, and he was up there on the retreat. I went up to confirm to find out whether he was still mad about it or not. He reiterated another threat against me and my family because I've done the thing with the backhoe, and he lost the backhoe or whatever. He did that, well, he actually gave it back to him, but he lost it. He thought I was interfering with his business. When he made the second threat, I pulled out my gun and I shot him. Because I figured I couldn't. I was actually in fear of him doing something to my family because I contacted the police. They told me there wasn't anything they could do about it until he'd actually committed a crime against them. So I was a little bit disturbed at the point in time. I regret having done it now. Thinking back, it was one of those things where I was upset about the fact, about worrying about my family, because at the time I was with my own daughter and I had five other foster children that were living with me with my new wife. So there's no way I could protect all of them. I had moved into town to avoid any confrontation.
Thank you, Mr. Klein, for your summary of the event. Am I correct that initially when you were arrested by the police and your case was presented in the courts that you denied killing Mr. Schmitter?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. When did you decide to take ownership or responsibility for the incident offense?
When my appeal process ended.
Now,
I claimed an appeal process based on technicalities in the case.
Now, Mr. Klein, I've served as the panel lead before you hearing before, and I remember some of the case, and certainly a lot of it comes back during review. And certainly what I'm about to say is no crime, but am I correct that at that time you were living off the grid, so to speak?
Yes, I was living off grid in a survival community. Mr. Schmitter is one of my neighbors.
And again, with respect to your lifestyle, what inspired you to live away from contact from the everyday community?
Well, we believed the economy was going to collapse, and when the economy collapsed, there would be total chaos in the cities, and we wanted a safe place to raise our families. That was the whole idea behind everybody in the survival community we lived in. There was no organized militia in the community. It was just a group of people that had gotten together to be able to live in a safe place if society, you know, the bubble had gone up and society collapsed, an economic collapse.
And also, with respect to you, as we say to everyone before this board, this board votes independently. We don't discuss the cases before we walk into the hearing room. But, and we're certainly not here to, again, retry the case or establish or develop new charges, but there are also some firearms issues involved. I remember references to a possible federal firearms violation, which I don't think were ever, those charges were never substantiated. But did you have a cache of weapons or firearms in your house?
I had legal weapons in my house, which the police seized and verified they were legally owned by myself, and they were returned to my mother. They also found parts to build machine guns buried outside in a fence near my home, which I believe belonged to some of the Class 3 licensed machine gun dealers that I also had for neighbors.
Okay, sir. Again, this is just to get the whole picture, and I was sincere when I said it's certainly not to suggest new charges, but to understand the whole of the case. So this was a very violent act. We can't be dismissive of murder case that was well substantiated in the courts and went through an appeal process, as you stated. At that time, many years ago, how did you arrive at a place where you had this capacity for violence? And before you answer that, what I'm getting at is we recognize that people change, that people go through a process. People are not the individuals sometimes they were when they were very young. And so what was going on in your life at that time that led to such a violent act?
Well, I was probably still mourning through the loss of my wife. I was married to a different woman when I first moved up on the retreat, and she died of cancer in my arms while she was on the retreat. She had a son that, well, she got sick, and within a matter of 6 weeks, she actually succumbed to cancer from uremic poisoning. And I was very broken down about that, so I wanted to have another, somebody to have a motherly influence for my daughter. So that's how I got tied up with Lisa Laughlin, who was the woman I was married to at the time that this took place, and she had a bunch of children. She was like the perpetual mother, so to speak. And it's probably to the loss of my wife and the idea of wanting to be a protective father figure all combined together to put a strain on my ability to reason at the time.
And again, you were disposed or tried to dispose of the body, or how did that unfold?
Well, I tried disposing of the body by burning it up in a fire, which Elaine Woodruff saw.
But were you using magnesium?
Magnesium shavings. I used to be a machinist. They're great for starting campfires and stuff like this. It's like little magnesium fire starter tools. But it's like a regular accelerant.
And speaking of being the machinist, had you been a contractor prior to living in this community, or where were you working?
Well, I worked for several different places. I started out working as Chrysler Corporation as a tool and die maker. Then when they laid me off there, I moved out to California. I became head of the tooling and maintenance department for Miller Dow Corporation. From there, I went into private business where I ran my own business, Fine's Custom Contracting, as a machinist and a die designer and builder. And from there, I basically retired up into the mountains because I thought the economy was going to go, collapse at the time.
In your plan or your release plan, because we receive the inmate progress report as an attachment to your case file, I think there was reference that you had been acceptance as a letter. You had acceptance at Reborn Assistance.
Yes.
That you were eligible for Social Security benefits.
Yes.
And now, again, I'm only asking the context of your ability to provide for yourself, should this board see fit to return you to the community, that you still had resources left over from those days?
I have over $300,000 left over from those days. I gave you, there should be documentation there in the parole packet,
sure,
showing some Chapman Financial.
I'm just asking you in your own words. I saw the documents attached at the rear, but it was just for, I'm basically saying the normal language. Let me get this straight. You still have a good sum of resources left over from prior to your conviction.
Well, I have enough resources where I can buy a house, plus the Social Security is going to pay me probably $1,700 a month, plus I have a small pension. I'm getting a $200 a month. Plus, I've got enough money to buy a home, a car, and still collect interest. Then in addition to that, I'll probably get some community service or some small part-time job just to keep active.
Well, that sounds like a good plan, sir. At this point, I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Thank you, Mr. Clark. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
Sir, in your house, did they recover some weapons from your house? I'm sorry.
Could you repeat the question? I can't hear you.
One second, sir.
Okay, how's that, sir? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, from your house, did they recover some weapons from your house?
They recovered a total of 47 long guns and handguns from my home.
Okay. And did they...
None of them were illegally owned. Nothing was illegal.
Okay. What about the Stein machine guns?
Those they found buried out on the perimeter of my residence in a fence.
Uh-huh.
And I believe they belonged to one of my neighbors that lived next door to me that had Class 3 licensed dealerships, which were where they can own machine guns. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. That was never determined. The feds never brought any charges against me. They never even came in and talked to me about them.
Okay. So, the juvenile that you had with you, why did you have that juvenile with you when the shooting took place?
Because I really wasn't sure what was going to happen at the time when I went up there to give the suspect to get Schmitter's books back. I was basically going up there to test the waters to find out whether he was still mad at me or not. Because I had experience with Germans. I'm part German myself. My grandfather spoke a lot of German. And Germans are mad at you until they're done being mad at you. And I hoped that he'd calm down and the dispute would be over with, but he got very irate with me. We got up there, the dispute wasn't over, and I felt, believe he was going to harm my family.
Okay, and how many times did you actually shoot him?
3 times.
Okay. Was there a reason why you had to shoot 3 times?
No, I wanted to make sure I killed him.
Okay. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any other questions from four board members? Okay, Mr. Klein. First of all, thank you for being so direct with your questioning this morning. At this point of the hearing, I am going to ask if your supporter on the telephone would like to share anything with the board. So, ma'am, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Are you Ms. Noel Burns?
Yes, I am.
Again, can you state your name for the record and can you state your name for the record?
Noel Burns. I'm his sister.
Thank you, ma'am. What would you like to share with the board this morning?
I'd like to have this parole granted. I'd like to be able to see him again before anything happens to me. I'm getting up there in age. And I haven't been able to see him in such a long time. But I feel he should at least have a chance to be on the outside and find something good in his life for a change. I don't have much more than that. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. And I would just ask you, again, this is, you're not under scrutiny or this is not your hearing, but to refresh my memory, were you living in this community during this time as well?
No, I live in Michigan.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Thank you for appearing before the board, Ms. Burns. Mr. Klein, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? I need to hold myself for a second. Do we have any representatives on behalf of the victim today? Okay, just want to make sure. I was getting a little ahead of myself. Okay, again, Mr. Klein, is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, that this is your hearing. So is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before the board deliberates and votes on this case?
Yes, I would.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. My entire life, I've supported my family, and I've lived a law-abiding life up until this point in time. I've never been arrested for drunk driving or drug abuse or anything else. I have no arrest record, no criminal past. I do recognize the fact that I did something very wrong, and it was very hurtful, and I do regret it a lot when I, took the law in my own hands by killing Mr. Schmitter. But since that time, I've also learned as far as following the rules and the law as best I could. The only ticket that you do have on record for me was when I was interfering with staff because it was a constitutional issue that they wanted me to voluntarily give up my rights, and I said no, so I ended up getting a ticket for that. But otherwise, I followed the rules the entire time in DOC, so I can follow the rules and I can live a good life, and I try to live a good life, to be responsible, and I worked at DOC in as many jobs as I could get and doing as many good things as I could. Prior to my moving here to Cibola, I was at Cheyenne Unit where for the last 4 years I taught mandatory literacy education to give back to the community. So I would like an opportunity to try and give back to the community again and live again with the community. But as far as breaking rules and following rules, that I don't have a problem with, and my history shows and establishes that. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you, Mr. Klein, and again, thank you for being so direct and frankly concise. I think you gave a pretty good summary of the incident offense and where you're at this stage of your rehabilitation inside the Department of Corrections. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you will just remain on the phone, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir. The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, as always in murder cases, this is certainly a tragedy. It's a very real victim of a murder in a violent crime. A long time has elapsed since Mr. Klein has been inside the Department of Corrections. He was sentenced to 25 years to life, and for the record, although I say it routinely as a board member, I will say again that I always see the two paths in a case such as this and recognize that there is a real possibility of parole or arrest, perhaps a discharge. And on the other hand, there's a very real possibility of life imprisonment, which is why the sentence is written the way it is. I will say that I want to give full credit to Mr. Klein for his behavior inside the Department of Corrections. He was very, very disciplined. He strikes me as an intelligent individual. It seems that he was very gainful for a long period of his life before the incident offense. He was 42 years old at the time of the incident offense with no criminal history but unaware of. And at this stage of his incarceration, he was taking ownership for the crime in question. And he does have tremendous potential in being self-reliant should he be returned to the community. So I will begin the discussion amongst ourselves by saying that I see promise in Mr. Klein, and I'm certainly open to taking supervised release under consideration. And that's where we'll begin. Yes, so the owner is dealing with this.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. I tend to agree with you. I'm seeing some positive things today. And one of them in particular is the well-thought-out release plan.
Yes.
With a place to live, financial, evidence that he's got the finances to support himself. And even though he has a very matter-of-fact way of talking and of talking about the crime itself, that's just the way some people are. And the fact that he had no criminal history, he's been able to follow the rules while he's in prison, which is very difficult. I just think, some people, it was a crime of passion. He feared for his family at the time, whatever was going through his mind. And I just don't think that he will commit another crime. I mean, he knows the consequences of committing a crime. As you said, I think he's a smart guy. So although his sister is far away in Michigan, he would have to make a life for himself here on any sort of supervised release. I think he's, with this plan, he's set up the resources to be able to do that. So I would be in favor at this point, sir. Thank you, Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Any other input from colleagues? Yes, the Honorable Mr. Neal.
Thank you, sir. As one going over the line, I'm leaving the situation a little bit different than my colleagues have talked about. I told him back to him, he took ownership of killing the guy, but he doesn't seem to understand that his reasoning was totally off base. Telling him to be worried about your family and everything, but the victim didn't pose an immediate threat, at least not a threat good enough to take his life. Once he'd taken his life, he went to great efforts to destroy the body so there wouldn't be any evidence. And talking to the detectives, that was one of the first things he said when they were talking to him about it. Did you have a body? And because it was rather hard to get a conviction for murder, he didn't have a body. And he went to great lengths to have a juvenile home and take the car and drive off and then abandon it. And he also keeps deflecting the idea of the illegal weapons, the machine guns. Granted, they were illegal in an open society. They couldn't have belonged to somebody else, but they were in buckets. It sounds like there was like trash out there, but they weren't sure they were well taken care of. But they were very apparently were around. And he's doing a good time. On the matter of fact part, it's concise. He just doesn't seem to want to take the blame. And yes, I killed a guy, but he was a threat to my family. And that was my way of doing it. I killed a guy, and everybody with my knees in chains. So I'm
thank you, Mr. Neal. Any further input from my colleagues? Okay. Well, I will say before I make my motion that I hear both my colleagues, because there are certainly factors to the case that are of concern, yet in looking at its whole, there are other factors that I don't want to say mitigate, because I certainly don't want to suggest that there's some sort of mitigation for murdering another individual. I think I'm just considering where Mr. Klein has arrived at this stage of his life, in his reform, so to speak. We're going to make a motion, and we'll see how the board votes. And then my motion is to grant an arrest, but to deny regular parole or absolute discharge, and that is my motion.
A second.
I disagree.
Disagreed by Mr. Neal, so make sure I get the paper correct. Mr. Johnson?
I disagree.
Okay. And Dr. White?
Disagree.
Okay. Then, I see no need for a counter motion. The board voted to... Well, hold on. Pardon me for a second. Is a counter motion necessary for...
Okay. It failed. A motion failed.
Okay, motion failed. So the motion was to grant, but we have three disagrees to two agrees, and the motion carries as denied. So I still have the mechanism of asking for a file for you. Correct? So we'll make sure that we're procedurally correct. And the least type denied is absolute discharge. Pardon me, regular parole, absolute discharge, and hold arrest. And reasons for denial as follows. And that is a serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury. We have little in the way of criminal history. And is there anything else anyone wishes to add? Okay, Mr. Klein, you heard how the board voted. You voted to, well, frankly, I voted to grant home arrest and to deny regular parole or absolute discharge. And the motion did not carry 3-2. And I stated the reasons for the denial. So do you have any questions at this point, sir?
When do I get my next parole hearing?
We asked for a 1-year set off, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Klein, and thank you for appearing before this board today. Ms. Burns, thank you for appearing by telephone. And this should bring our hearing to a close. Thank you.